The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 98 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to talk about surprises and disappointments through the first quarter of the 2017-18 NBA season. Before we get underway, I wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. In our bio, you can find all of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We would love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter, at FanRag Sports, and for their NBA content, at FanRag NBA. Joining me today, as always, is my co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. We recorded approximately 20 minutes ago, so no change.
Yeah, we're recording 97 and 98 back-to-back, just banging them all out on a nice sunny Friday afternoon. So let's dive right into the surprises, Mort. I mean, so far this season, there have been a lot of good ones and then a couple bad ones that we'll get to later. We almost have to start with the Detroit Pistons, right? Like, most of us penciled them in as a fringe playoff team, kind of in the mix with Philly, Charlotte, Miami for that 7 or 8 spot. Right now, they're number 2 in the East. They are tied with the Cleveland Cavaliers in terms of games back from Boston, but they have a slightly higher win percentage. I mean, it's really, you know, Reggie Jackson is playing well coming off the last year. Tobias Harris is turning into the kind of this go-to scorer that they needed. But the big story with Detroit is Andre Drummond. I mean, in terms of scoring and rebounding, he's basically right in line with career averages. Shot blocking, the same story. Assists, though, heading into the year, he had never averaged more than 1.1 assists in his career. He was through the first 5 years of his career, 0.7 per game. This year, 3.7 per game. Before this year, he had never had more than 4 assists in a game. So far this year alone, he's had 6 games with 5 or more, including 2 with 7. I mean, the fact that the Pistons have basically changed his role on the fly, turned him into more of this, he's not a ball handler, but turned him into more of an offensive focal point and a hub where they can base their playmaking around, that's been a big story. I mean, they're cutting out his post-ups and they're using him this way, and look at the success they've been having with it. So, you know, we gave our an update into the award race recently, and in retrospect, like, Andre Drummond should be right up there for most improved player, should he not?
It's two major aspects that he's improved upon: free throw shooting and playmaking / assists. So I would argue yes, but I get counter arguments though.
Yeah, right. I do too. I mean, those two things are really the drastic improvements. And aside from that, he's still just
a same old gobbler.
Yeah. But like the fact that, you know, he headed into the year as a question mark and they didn't know whether they could build around him, and they were shopping him at the trade deadline last year and listening to offers over the summer. Now, like, all the teams that called about him and were trying to get him and then balked at the price, like, I bet there are a lot of remorseful front offices right now, given the improvements he's shown both as a passer and a free throw shooter. As you mentioned, 63.0% from the free throw line, by far his career high. It does not seem as though, you know, he's not going to hit 80% probably ever in his career, but
maybe not even 70, but
yeah, the fact he's gone from below 40 to above 60 means the hack of Drummond thing isn't going to be as prevalent as it once was. So shouts to Andre Drummond, shouts to the Pistons. Looking forward to seeing y'all in the playoffs if everyone stays healthy. Mort, who's a surprise that's caught your eye so far?
I mean, I called him as an all-star before the season, but that was not like a testament to his skill. That was more of as my description of the Eastern Conference.
Right.
And that was Aaron Gordon. Yeah. But now I'm sticking with my All-Star prediction, but I'm changing my argument and going, mm-hmm. now he deserves it. Now he's not just a black eye on the Eastern Conference. He's actually doing something worthwhile. The Magic have unfortunately turned back into dust or whatever,
right. Right.
because they were looking really good, and they're 9-13 right now. They just lost, they lost 9 in a row,
yeah,
before winning against OKC, because obviously you win against OKC these days.
Right.
Yeah, but Aaron Gordon, 18.6 points a game, 8.4 rebounds, 44% from downtown, 51% from the field. It's getting to the line, not as much as I was hoping for, and not as much as I thought his build could take, so I want to see a little bit of improvement there.
Mm-hmm.
4.3 free throws a game, hitting them at 76%. I once called Aaron Gordon like the new age Draymond, because I thought that he would be able to be a playmaker and get his assists up, and I want to sort of... But I want to both pat myself on the back and I want to slap my own jaw really hard, because here's the thing. The assist numbers are not really going to come, but that dude has a very good handle and he can dribble the basketball up the court. And the advantage that you have as a power forward, taking the ball off the glass and being able to dribble the ball up court and setting up an offense, it just throws offenses off. It's this playmaking for... And, you know, credits to Zach Lowe for coining the phrase, two, three years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But the playmaking four is a thing, and Gordon seems to be a type of guy who understands it and utilizes it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really dig how he's using his athleticism on both ends of the court now. Defensively speaking, he's taking more chances with his own body, which I appreciate. And I know that what you're going to say, it also helps that he's playing his natural position.
Right. Yeah, yep.
I know. I agree completely. It's a terrific point, and it's definitely something that we should be happy to see. And let's just hope it's the case moving forward. I could just imagine Orlando trading for a four, and then, hey, Aaron, got news, buddy. How do you like to play the three?
Yeah,
Terrence Ross is out indefinitely anyway.
Oh, God.
So.
Please, no. Not again.
Yeah. But yeah, he's been a surprise. I thought he would be, I guess, sort of average.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being one of those guys who got decent and then kind of stuck around that area.
Mm-hmm.
But then I kind of realized he's a big.
Yeah.
He's not one of those wings that stagnates for years and years. He's a big, and now he's being utilized as a big. He's a strange big, but a big nonetheless. So, yeah, I mean, good on you, Aaron Gordon. And take more shots. He's taking 12.8 shots attempts a game. I want to see that bump up to like 15, 16.
Yeah. I mean, the fact he's canning free throws at the rate that he is incredible. Mm. Like, that's the thing that's caught me by surprise. I expected not this type of a breakout, but... definitely him to take a big step forward now that, as you said, he's playing his natural position, because he's done this after each of the past two All-Star breaks. They shifted him to the four, and like, lo and behold, he was actually this really good do-it-all playmaker type player.
Mm-hmm.
But the free or that three-point shooting, that's a surprise. I did not see that coming this quickly for him. He's started to regress a little bit in that department. He was up near, I think, 50% through his first 10 or 12 games. Now he's still north of 40, but falling much like the Magic. But, I mean, still, it's a testament to his devotion to his craft, the fact that he added that big element to his game, that he realized this is where the NBA is going, and I'm going to not have, you know, I'm either going to be a tweener without a jump shot, or I could be, you know, a $100 million player if I add this three-pointer.
Mm-hmm. So, and he did, to his credit.
Yeah, so heading
into... Not turning the ball over either.
Oh, yeah, oh, true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was Nori rattling.
Sure was, yeah. That was, apologies, nice. that was my dog waking up from his...
Oh, you should never apologize for having a dog. It should be celebrated. I'm jealous.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to go to another playmaking big, Ben Simmons. You guys know I am a Philly homer through and through. I kept my expectations for Simmons in check. I just didn't know what to realistically expect from him, especially with, you know, he missed the first year. I didn't think Markelle Fultz would have a shoulder injury, so I thought he was going to have to balance touches with Fultz. So far, Simmons has so vastly exceeded any expectations that I, or frankly anyone but the most, you know, absurd Philly fan had for him, that not only
so
is
you
he, yeah right but not only is he a shoo-in for rookie of the year, I mean he is in legit contention for an all-star berth as well. 18.6 points, 9.4 rebounds, 7.2 assists, 2.3 steals. I think that's the surprise.
Yeah, like, did not see that coming.
Yeah, like I knew he was going to be a walking triple-double threat at some point. I didn't know it would happen in his first like five games. But his activity on the defensive end is sublime. Like he really has locked in on that level. And that was a concern with him coming out of college. In LSU, he just didn't really seem to give a damn all that much. But, you know, he has, what, 8 million reasons to change his mind about that this year. Like, now he is really locked in on that end as well. And it's helped the Sixers. Yeah, I mean, Joel Embiid is the big reason they have a top 10 defense. But having guys like Simmons and Covington playing good defense as well, I mean, they are just, with those three and Dario Saric in the starting lineup, they are just a long mess of limbs that is really difficult to pass around. So the, you know, the fact that Simmons is not just an offensive playmaker, but is also a promising defensive player, now he's going from, like, yeah, multi-time all-star to, like, oh, he actually, he's a franchise cornerstone. He's got, you know, top 15 potential moving forward, top 10, dare I say. I mean, Lee Jenkins just had a story come out in Sports Illustrated yesterday where LeBron James told Ben Simmons that Ben could be better than him someday. Yes, he said he can't skip the steps, but, you know, that's the type of talent we're talking about. So I would be remiss if I did not shout Ben Simmons out for being a very pleasant surprise in the first month of the season. Who else for you, Mort?
Do you feel good now?
I do.
Did you get this off your chest?
The only thing he could improve upon beyond his three-point shooting, which he has yet to hit a three still, free throws. I would never like to see another game where he attempts 24 free throws in the fourth quarter again. So hopefully he becomes a better free throw shooter, so no team emulates the hack a Ben strategy that the Wizards broke out on Wednesday night.
If a guy takes 29 free throws in a game and he finishes with 31 points, something's off. Let me just put it that way.
Yeah.
All right. So you got that off you. It's gone now, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I had a feeling. I've been avoiding Ben Simmons conversations on this podcast because I knew that would just be an invitation to go down the rabbit hole. And unlike Alice, never return.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to eat crow. And I'm going to go Victor Oladipo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Remember when I said, ha, 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 that trade is shit.
You weren't the only one.
I know, but I was really crabbing on it because I said, and I will quote myself, the Oklahoma City Thunder got Paul George for a bad contract. Because that's what I called him. He was a bad contract.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out, not surprisingly, Mort was wrong. I will say this. He didn't really show anything. He showed something, but he didn't show quite as much over the past couple years to warrant necessarily the greatest vote of confidence in him. But that sure as hell is on him right now. 23 points a game, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, almost 2 steals, a block, 44% from downtown on high volume, 5 free throw attempts per game, hitting 80%. This dude is just getting it done in Indiana. His PER of almost 22, true shooting percentage of almost 58%. I mean, what can you really say about this guy? He came in, the expectations were just slim to none. You kind of thought, okay, he would have a decent scoring year. He might regain his sophomore stat line, like 18 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. But it's not just much. It's not only the scoring. It's the efficiency, the all-aroundedness, the defense. Just he's rounded out his game. And I would be surprised if he's not an all-star, even if Indiana isn't the best team.
Yeah. I like, coming from it from a fantasy basketball perspective, Victor Oladipo was an obvious breakout pick, but much like Aaron Gordon, I didn't expect him to break out to this degree. Mm. And then Sabonis, like, yeah. All of us treated him as a throw-in, basically. We were all like, well, whatever, he didn't do anything in OKC. You know, Miles Turner went down with a concussion in the first game. Sabonis stepped right in and was putting up double-doubles left and right. Like, I don't want to say, you know, you're still taking, in terms of talent, you're still taking Paul George over Oladipo and Sabonis, but is, as you said, it is nowhere near, even, you know, 3 months later, is nowhere near as bad of a trade as it looked like right after it happened, or even in the summer. Mm. Like, the Pacers are set up well now. They have two guys they can legitimately build around moving forward.
And Sabonis and Victor Oladipo's chemistry is pretty telling as well. I mean, the dribble handoff action, mm-hmm. between those two guys.
Yep.
That's, I mean, I'm not going to say it's Kyrie, Al Horford level,
mm-hmm.
but it's not dimensions off either.
Yeah.
They have good chemistry. And if you add Miles Turner to that thing, which you have right now, I mean, you at least have something you can build upon. Slightly surprising, related as well, Bojan Bogdanovic is averaging 15 points a game.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Hi, Bojan. Sorry we forgot about you, but, I mean, yeah, you're still not rebounding, I see. 3 a game.
Right, but right.
The Pacers as a whole, they're kind of fun.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think heading into the year, I said I was concerned about them because I thought they had the ceiling of a 10 seed, but they would be too good to be, like, competing with Chicago, Atlanta, Phoenix, the dregs of the league.
Yeah. And,
I mean, right now they're in the playoffs. Like, if the playoffs started today, you know, they're only a half game above the Knicks, so a lot can change in the next 60 games, but they're at least frisky enough to, you know, they're proving us all wrong so far. So I love the Oladipo pick and just the Pacers in general. I think we need to talk about a couple defenses that realistically no one could have expected being as good as they are heading into the year. I'm going to leave the top one to you because it pains me to say anything good about that team. So I'm going to go with the Blazers, who have the number 2 defense in the league.
Yep.
They haven't changed personnel-wise. They didn't change that much. One of their best defenders, Al-Farouq Aminu, has been out for a couple weeks now. How are they doing it? So Michael Pena, Vice Sports, actually had a really good feature Tuesday, kind of asking that question, like, how the hell is this? How you know this Blazers team with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, neither of whom are perceived as great defenders, how are they the number 2 defense in the league? And they haven't, you know, schematically, they haven't changed all that much. Apparently, it's just attention to detail. He spoke with a number of players, and that continued to come up. So it's just they communicate better. I think having, you know, chemistry and not having the roster turnover that a lot of teams did this summer, like, they went into training camp knowing, all right, it's going to be Dame, CJ, Yusuf Nurkic on the blocks. Mo Harkless is a good defender. Al-Farouq Aminu is a good defender. Those are going to be our guys. Let's develop some chemistry with that starting lineup. And the Aminu injury hurt, but it hasn't hurt that much. I mean, Portland is firmly in the playoff conversation at 13-9. Harkless recently lost his starting job, and the Blazers are no worse for the wear, notwithstanding the absolute pacing the Bucks put on them Thursday night. So, you know, the Blazers, I think we've always thought of them as like a poor man's Rockets, where They were just going to have a crappy defense, but if they could outscore you, if it was like 120 to 115, that's the way they're going to win a playoff series. If this Portland team, if this defense is real, they become that much more interesting in the playoff mix. Like, I don't think, I did not have them as a playoff team heading into the year. I regrettably had the Clippers, which is going to come and bite me in the ass. I think I had Portland ninth. So right now, given all the injuries in the West to Blake Griffin, Paul Millsap, Rudy Gobert, Mike Conley, it seems like Portland is comfortably going to make the playoffs. If this defense is real, they might be primed for a first-round upset, particularly of a Minnesota team that we will talk about in a little bit.
And imagine Damian actually hitting his stride from downtown. He's shooting 33% right now, which is not the norm.
Right.
Like, he's going to bounce back.
For sure. For sure. Do you want dibs on the other good defense no one saw coming?
I really don't.
I could take it if you don't.
No. Here's the thing. We need to tell people why we are Boston fatigued. And I mean, let's just be honest here. There are a lot of good Boston fans. Like, you just mentioned Michael Pena, who made the article on Vice. You know, he wrote that piece on the Blazers. Like, he's a Boston fan. You have Jay King. You have James Hollis. You have a lot of good guys who are Boston fans. It's the attachments of those guys, like the followers of those guys, who are just consistently in one's mentions and basically building the team up as if they even could beat, you know, the 1986 version of that team, you know, which gets a little bit tiring because let's play a season before we know what's there. But credit is well deserved with Boston this year, especially for their defense. They lead the league, which is especially impressive considering you have Kyrie Irving at starting at the point guard position. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. I am sorry, I'm just forgetting names right now. But those two guys are just wreaking havoc. They have these long arms, and they're athletic, and they're quick, and they're young, and they disrupt passing lanes, and they just make life so difficult for opponents. Then you have Al Horford, who can position himself perfectly basically everywhere on the court because he just understands basketball. You have Marcus Smart, who you throw in as like a Swiss Army knife defensively. He might suck offensively. He really does. He's shooting 31%. It's really awful. But defensively, he's sublime. And you can even argue that the activity level of Terry Rozier coming off the bench is adding to it, because while Rozier, in a nutshell and isolated, is not a strong defensive-minded player, he just comes in with such pizzazz and energy and high motor that teams are already tired at that point because they've tried to beat a well-established Boston defense. And here comes a guy who's an energy bunny, and oh man, teams are just not up for the challenge by that time, and he utilizes that. So he gets steals and just runs teams off the court. What Boston is doing right now is really, really impressive. I still think they could have had a better summer. I'm not going away from that, but I love what they're doing. It's really impressive. But before we move on, I have to ask you this question because I've seen this on Twitter a lot. Is Kyrie Irving the same player, or is he a different leveled up superstar?
I think he is. I think he's more or less the same player. I just think he's getting more attention now that he's not playing next to LeBron James. Like, he's less worried about having, like, do I have to share the ball with this guy, particularly in the fourth quarter? Like, he just knows. It's, you know, much like in the fourth quarter in Portland, it's Damian Lillard time. Kyrie knows fourth quarter, it's Kyrie time. Like, I'm going to take over. I'm going to drive to the rack. I'm going to draw fouls. I'm going to hit three-pointers. That's just what I do. Like, I'm the guy that needs to create offense late in games. And he's, you know, he doesn't have to worry about, like, is LeBron James going to subtweet me after the game because I took five shots and he took two and we lost.
Like, and if he does, fuck it, because I'm on a different team.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Do you think he's the same, more or less the same player as well?
I do, and I've just been kind of confused by the whole narrative that he suddenly was unlocked going to Boston. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, he put on a different uniform, and we are seeing a more careful Kyrie when it comes to ball handling. And I get that he has lowered his turnover somewhat, and that's a thing. But I mean, I'm looking at Al Horford as one of the reasons for it. I mean, this guy can handle the basketball. He can dribble. He's secure. He passes well. Like, he plays a big part in Boston's success. Yeah. I think it would be unfair to Al to just kind of paint Kyrie as this sort of savior for the season.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I mean, the screens that Horford sets for Kyrie are impeccable. Also, the dribble handoff action between the two of them, it's unreal for them only having played like just about 20 games together. I mean, it seems like they've been playing 5 years together. So, yeah, I think you're right. It's like, I think Kyrie is playing better than he ever has before, but I don't think it's like a whole step up. I just think the fact that the context around him has changed so much that like he's getting more attention now, but you know, that's it. Like that's a compliment to him. Like he's just always been a really good player. Like he should have never been viewed as like a little brother sidekick to LeBron in Cleveland. Like he's always been an all-star caliber player. And people said when he was in Cleveland, like, oh, it's LeBron doing this. No, like Kyrie's really good. I pegged him as a dark horse MVP candidate heading into the year. I mean, I don't think he's going to get there. Like, James Harden and LeBron, and you could pick a Warrior. Like, all of those guys are ahead of him right now. But he Giannis? At least... Yeah, Giannis. Like, he...
How did you forget Giannis?
Well, Giannis is slowing down since the Bledsoe thing. He has not been as... I mean, right now, if you had to pick an MVP through the first quarter of the season, I think it's Harden without question. LeBron's starting to heat up now that the Cavs decided to give a shit in November. Yeah.
Giannis slowing down. I love that a guy slowing down is still averaging 29, 10, 4.5 assists, almost 2 steals and 2 blocks. But I get what you're saying.
Yeah, he's not putting up like 35 plus points per night like he was in the first couple weeks of the season. I'm actually going to go with LeBron James as another pleasant surprise. And you guys know I picked him as my MVP heading into the year. I mean, he's basically, like, I thought he was going to do an FU campaign, like, basically his blaze of glory as on his way out of Cleveland. Here's what's surprising. I mean, we knew, like, he's doing the same old thing. 28 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists a game. That's nothing new. He's shooting 42.5% from 3-point range on nearly 5 attempts per game. That's the surprise. And so, apparently... He had an elbow injury during the offseason, according to Dave McMenamin of ESPN. And like McMenamin said his right shooting elbow mysteriously swelled to the size of a tennis ball a few weeks after the NBA Finals. So he changed his shooting form. And so far, the early returns are pretty damn good. I mean, he's got Kyle Korver, one of the best shooters in league history, to learn from and to play alongside. So I'm sure... You know, he's played alongside Ray Allen in the past, too. Like, he's gotten all this advice from, you know, these knockdown shooters. If LeBron James turned into a 40% three-point shooter, and this is sustainable throughout the season, I mean, goddamn, like, he's never going to slow down. He's just going to play till he's 45 and continue dropping 30-plus points a night. It's unreal. And it makes me, I mean... You know, we've both expressed our concerns about Cleveland's viability in the playoffs, both in the East and then against the Warriors. This version of LeBron, I'm not going to bet against. Like, it's terrifying.
And to imagine that he's turning 33.
Yeah.
This month.
Right. Like, yeah, right. I guess, yeah, today's December 1st. So at the end of the month, he'll turn 33. He's averaging... 1.2 blocks per game, a career high for a regular season, shooting 58.3% overall, a career high. Like, there are just no words at this point to describe how good he is, but the fact that he's adding, like, again, if he added a reliable 3-point stroke to his game, what is this, year 15 of his career, That's lights out. It's lights out for the NBA. So I wanted to at least give Bron a shout out for that particular development.
We should also be on the lookout because this season he should crack 30,000 points, 8,000 rebounds, and 8,000 assists.
Wow. Yeah. Jeez. And he's not far away from 2,000. He's not going to hit it this year, but in his career, he's going to get 2,000 steals and 1,000 blocks as well.
Probably. Let's see. He had 44 blocks last year, 26 now. So he has to keep the current rate going.
Yeah.
But you know, if he's playing to 45, who cares?
Right. Exactly. Like he's about to turn 33. Like he's going to get there.
Of course he is. I consistently have this feeling that he's at the end of his career because of his age. Like because this is the age where Kobe started slowing down.
That's true. It's worth noting that he has never had, you know, he's had a couple weird elbow injuries, including the one in 2010 right before he left Cleveland. But he's never had, knock on wood, a torn ACL, a torn Achilles, like any torn knee ligaments that would sideline him for multiple months at a time. So,
is it weird that as his career progresses, I'm almost like experiencing fear for him actually, causing harm to himself on the court?
I mean, he might just be a robot at this point. Like that's the only logical explanation for how he's doing what he's doing.
Man. Yeah, no, it's insane.
Yeah.
All right. I am going to go with Chris Dunn. We need to talk about Chris Dunn for a little bit. Let's just say it right off the bat. Chris Dunn is probably not going to become the player that he was drafted as in 2016. He was a top five pick, and he was coming in with Dwayne Wade comparisons. I even made that comparison because he moved like him a lot. Out of Providence, and no to people who say, "Oh, he only wore his jersey number. That's why people said he played lightweight." No, not because it's his fluidity, has athleticism, defensive attention, and the defensive attention is one that has really been accurate. I am seeing a guy who gambles a lot, yes, but he's also grabbing two steals a game in less than 27 minutes at night. He is just clobbering smaller guards. He's a 6'4 guard who's got like a 6'9, 6'10 wingspan. And he's finally realizing how to use that body of his. I was looking at that in Minnesota last year, and he just seemed to completely ignore the fact that he was bigger and stronger than most of his opponents. And now, suddenly, out of nowhere, he's going like, "Oh, hey, I'm 6'4", 210 pounds. I'm playing a point guard position. I matched up against guys who are a lot smaller. I can abuse them." And he needs that credit. And his offense is coming along somewhat slowly, but it's coming along. So kudos to Chris Dunn. He still turns the ball over way too much, but he's doing a little bit more than I expected. I thought he would be bad, and he hasn't been bad. And that's a compliment when you're a Chicago Bull.
I like that pick. And if there are any people in fantasy basketball leagues out there, he's only owned in 30% of ESPN.com leagues. He should be owned in far more. I've been writing waiver wire rankings for FanSided every week, and I mentioned him just about every week because he's been playing, I'd say, as well as could possibly be expected for a Bulls point guard of the future. All right, I'm gonna do one more surprise. I gotta go with Brandon Ingram here. You know, early in the year we were talking about him because Lakers fans were pretty checked out on him, and were, you know, when D'Angelo Russell got off to that hot start, they were all like, "Oh man, I wish we traded Brandon Ingram instead of D'Angelo Russell." I don't think they're saying that anymore. No. He's coming off of a 32-point performance against the Golden State Warriors. Yes, it was in overtime, but, you know, if you were on Twitter when that game was going on, there was a lot of the Spider-Man pointing at each other memes with him and Kevin Durant. Over, not counting the 32-pointer, Let's see. Over his last six, he's had double-digit points in every game. He's averaging 17 points, nearly 7 rebounds, 4 assists, and 1.3 blocks in just under 33 minutes a night.
Yeah.
He's starting to look like the player that we expected him to become coming out of Duke. Like, I think last year he was just really young. He's still really young. He just turned 20 in September. He's still really skinny. It's going to take him a while to build out his frame, just like it will for any player that young and that skinny. But if I'm a Lakers fan, I'm feeling pretty damn good about Brandon Ingram right now. Like, I can now see why Magic Johnson over the offseason said people were calling about Brandon Ingram engaging his trade value. And Magic's like, we just hung up the phone every time. We're not trading him. And, you know, early in the season, that looked laughable. It's not laughable anymore. He looks like a legit piece to build around moving forward for the Lakers.
Yes. Whether or not he's the new Kevin Durant, I'm personally very skeptical.
Yeah, right.
I don't think he's ever going to be that superstar that we had in mind.
Yeah.
But a very strong, long career where he makes the All-Star team at least a couple times, that seems very reasonable.
Yeah. Going to those comparisons for a minute, like I it's dumb to compare players to the top three or four players in the league. Like, Ben Simmons should not be compared to LeBron James, because LeBron James is one of the three best basketball players to ever play the game. Like, that's a very effing high bar to set. Like, if Ben Simmons is 80% of LeBron, I'm happy. If Brandon Ingram is 80% of Kevin Durant, who, you know, who knows how many rings he's going to win in Golden State, but, like, he could retire, what, at least as a top 15 all-time player, depending on how much success he has over the next couple of years. Like,
yeah,
I mean, you know, like, it's not fair to a Brandon Ingram to say, yeah, he's the next top 15 all-time player. Like, there just aren't that many of those guys.
So, just correct me if I'm wrong here, but when we were podcasting back in 2015, right? Or 16, sorry. You were pretty much on the whole Ben Simmons as a LeBron James type of player coming out.
Yeah.
When the Sixers won the lottery.
Stylistically, they are very similar. If that's the comparison you're going for, that's fine. Like, if you're just saying, like, he reminds me of that type of player because he's a big guy
who can pass
and handle the ball in transition, and Brandon Ingram reminds me of Kevin Durant because he's a tall, lanky guy who can shoot over everyone.
Right.
That's fine, but, like, don't peg, you know, I just don't like when we peg these players. Like, when Lonzo Ball is getting pegged as the next Magic Johnson, get the fuck out of here. Like, just don't do that to these guys. Like, it's hard enough to transition to the NBA. They don't need those type of expectations. Like, call him the next Rudy Gay, and then he's going to be better than Rudy Gay. So then that's fine. Then he can exceed the expectations. But, like, let's not put them up against, like, I don't want to hear about the next Steph Curry. Like, Nick Stauskas was not the next Steph Curry.
Sorry. No, Buddy Hield is.
Yeah, right. Is he?
No, but I think you raise an interesting point here. There are statistical profiles, and there are playing style. Mm-hmm. And if you compare statistical profiles, it's basically a moot point right off the bat, because you can't compare a guy coming off college to a guy averaging 26 points a night, and more than that, actually, because Durant is a beast.
Yeah.
Agreed. Like, playing style, body-wise, yeah, sure, you can make those comparisons. It's okay. Like, DeAndre Ayton, his physical profile reminds me of David Robinson. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean he's David Robinson. Mm-hmm. He's very likely not David Robinson.
Yeah. The odds are firmly against him being David Robinson.
Extremely low. Yeah. So that's the physical profile. And that's fine and dandy, but yeah, you just can't compare the statistical / production lines of it all. So maybe we should just be more careful and attach more words to the way that we compare players.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I want to make it clear, I was not attacking you in that rant.
Of course you were, you dirtbag.
just the overall sentiment of, you know, pegging this guy as the next Steph Curry or next, right. next Michael Jordan. Like, let's chill.
Bite your goddamn tongue. Whoever said something like that, next Michael.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Right.
Just the competitive nature of Mike alone.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, people are saying Russell Westbrook, but get the fuck out of that. No.
Right.
I mean, Mike could step on a piece of gum outside and he would be pissed off at a city for 5 years because why didn't you clean your sidewalks? I'm going to average 40 on your asses.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Not saying Mike was healthy, by the way.
Right. All right, any other surprises jump out to you, or do you want to flip over to the disappointments?
I mean, look, I did not expect Lonzo Ball to be this good. I mean, 31% from the field?
Oh, my God.
26% from downtown, 47% from the line? I mean, hashtag numbers.
Oh, man. Well, I guess we're moving to disappointments. Do you have anything else to add about Lonzo?
Yeah, I do. I was kidding because it's fun to see the reactions of it. Look, I think we can all agree on something. Right now, he is horrible. He is absolutely horrible right now, but that's okay.
Yeah.
He's a rookie. He's 20 years old, barely turned 20, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's rebounding really, really well.
Yep.
He's playmaking well. I mean, he's getting more steals and blocks than I ever thought. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that he's a strong defender necessarily, but it means he can pick up stats, and eventually those stats could lead to meaningful defense. So I'm like, you know, give the kid some time. I don't think he's got the same ceiling as I maybe thought going into the draft. Mm-hmm. But that's okay. That doesn't mean he's a bust yet. He's playing badly, but look, 5 years down the line, he might be good. Is he going to be a top five wing player or a guard? Probably not. But he could still be decent. That's fine. That's all good. So that was just more of a commentary of his, you know, perception, and of course what Voldemort brings.
Right. And I think that's, I saw this on Twitter the other day because someone retweeted a Skip Bayless tweet, actually, and Skip Bayless was defending Lonzo and saying, like, yeah, he's shooting like shit, but, you know, he's already had, I think, 2 triple-doubles. He's, as you mentioned, like, rebounding well, getting a lot of assists. Like, outside of the shooting woes, he is playing about as expected, perhaps, as you mentioned, even better defensively than expected, at least in terms of steals and blocks.
Yeah.
It's just Voldemort built such high expectations for him. And I don't even think people, like, most of us didn't buy into them, right? Like, none of us thought, oh, yeah, he's going to walk on the floor and be the next Magic. Like, we knew he was going to struggle because we knew that shot was broken. And
hashtag we, though.
Yeah.
Like, Twitter crowd. Sorry, I mean, that's not to put ourselves in a higher position, but those of us who write about the league, who podcast about the league, who follow the league religiously, we have a... Oh, my God, we're going to lose 1,000 listeners for saying this, but we have a slightly higher understanding of the league than the casual fans. And then remember that we're talking about Lakers fans here.
Yeah, that's true.
And no disrespect to hardcore Lakers fans, quite the opposite. A lot of respect to hardcore Lakers fans because those guys are actually pretty smart. Mm-hmm. It's the casual Laker fans that are just turning every word that Voldemort said and going, oh, now I expect this and this and that.
Yeah.
So you're right. Like, hashtag we expected this, and that's fine. But the average crowd are now going, oh, he sucks. He's bad. We should trade him. Let's get him. let's get a second round pick for him while we still can.
Yeah.
And shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, Jahlil Okafor can't even fetch a second round pick, so maybe they're onto something.
That's true.
No.
Maybe a swap there. Yeah. Lonzo for Jahlil. Here we go.
Perfect. Everyone's happy.
Everyone's you get your center, Laker fans, casual Lakers fans.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I mean, yes, he's The shooting is a concern. They're going to work on the shot over the summer. They just didn't want to. They wanted to see if it would work. And so far it hasn't. Maybe he turns it around over the next 60 games. But if not, Magic has already said, look, if he keeps shooting like this, we're going to talk to him over the summer. We're going to rework the shot. Like, they're not going to give up on him because he can't shoot well. Like, he is still their point guard of the future, for better or worse. So, yes, he's been a disappointment so far relative to expectations, not only based on his father, but, you know, as the number two pick. You have a certain baseline of expectations, and he has yet to live up to them as a scorer, but that's fine. Like, I feel like I never expected him to shoot well. I didn't expect it to be this bad, but I did not. I figured he would struggle. So it's a disappointment, but it's not a surprising disappointment, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And look, here's on the bright side. In 5 or 6 years' time, I promise you the Chinese League will have a fantastic streaming service available so we can follow him there if things goes badly.
Oh my god. Yeah, that's true.
Could you imagine LeVar Ball trying to take a... Oh, sorry. Oh no! I said it! No!
Damn it, Morton!
Could you imagine Voldemort... Oh no, the magic's gone. Could you imagine LeVar taking on China?
No. I don't... Oh my god. I'm not going down that path. All right, I want to talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder for a minute. Not only are they outside of the playoff picture at 8-12 right now, but they are a godless abomination in crunch time. When they get in the close games, they are 1-9. Their net rating in clutch situations is a -42.2.
Ugh.
That is below every team except for the Dallas Mavericks. I mean, again, to a certain extent, we figured they might struggle, especially in those situations, because Russ is coming off of his triple-double campaign where he's just pounding the ball on the floor every possession in the fourth quarter, and it just all came down to him. Carmelo and Paul George are used to being the number one options on their team. It takes a while to figure out the pecking order, basically. They brushed off those concerns early in the year, but they continue to bite them in the ass, especially in close games in the fourth quarter. I think they get it figured out in time. Like, I'm not writing them off. You know, I think they're still going to be in the playoffs. I'm expecting them to figure this out over the coming weeks, especially because, you know, this is a too high profile of a combination not to put the effort in to figure this thing out. Like, all of those guys are hopefully level-headed enough to not just like check out mentally on the year, but goddamn, -42.2. They are the Bulls, just for context, who have played 9 crunch time games so far, are a -19.4. The Chicago Bulls,
who
are a train wreck among train wrecks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The Thunder are twice as bad. More than twice as bad.
So here's what's funny to me. Because we anticipated this Thunder squad to be decent offensively because of all the offensive talent. And be somewhat shaky defensively.
Yep.
They are the third best defense in the league, and they have the 21st best, or 8th worst, however you want to call it, offense in the league. Which is just mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to they just need to figure out. It's a matter of developing chemistry between those three guys, and until they do that, as you said, they're playing really well defensively. Paul George looks more locked in than ever on that end, and we saw that phenomenon happen with KD last year in Golden State too. The less energy you have to devote offensively, being the takeover guy every possession, the more you can do defensively. So Paul George is taking advantage of that. Carmelo.
Carmelo.
Yeah, right. He's still kind of a train wreck on defense. Like, there were some clips going around from that Magic game the other night where he would try to close out on Aaron Gordon, and his feet were just kind of... I think someone said he was having a seizure, or his feet were having a seizure. Because he just didn't really know, like... He just kept him moving, did not ever plant into a stance, and Aaron Gordon just blew by him like three or four times.
Yeah,
but like they have the pieces. I mean, Roberson, they have Westbrook could be a good defender. Steven Adams is above average as well. Like they have the pieces to be a good defensive team. Once they figure it out on offense, I have confidence they will be back in the playoff mix. But it's hard not to be disappointed by the Thunder through the first quarter of the season.
Can we also talk about how Russell Westbrook, this year at least, it should be somewhat unacceptable that he's averaging 4.7 turnovers, considering he has a Paul George and a Carmelo Anthony next to him?
Yeah, I know. I mean, a friend of the podcast, James Hollis, who is one of the most ardent Westbrook defenders on basketball Twitter, has even started putting the microscope on Russ recently.
Yeah.
And just been saying, you know, they're not playing. I think it was against the Magic the other night. He had four first quarter turnovers. It's just like, it's not going to get it done. That's just not how you win. Not how you win games. So yeah, that's a really good point, Mort. The turnovers. I mean, you know, he's been a turnover machine for years, but as you said, playing next to those two guys, it's not like he has to make as much happen on his own as he did last year. So there's much less of an excuse this time around.
And it's impressive. It's almost impressive because the team as in itself is seventh in the league and hanging on to the basketball. So Westbrook himself solely is responsible for them not having like an elite security team when it comes to not turning the ball over.
Yeah. Wow. That's atrocious.
Yeah, it is. All right. So looking at disappointments, I'm glad you took OKC because I wasn't going down that well. Miami?
Yeah.
I still like the signings, Brian.
You do?
I know they... Yeah, because what did they have? Like, right. what was the alternative?
Right.
Like, that turnaround last season.
Yeah.
I get why they had to gamble on it.
Yeah, I agree.
I get it, but at this point, they were close to 500. They're 10-11, so they still have time to turn around.
Mm-hmm.
So, at this point, if they do, like, if they make the switch like they did last year, this podcast is going to look foolish.
Right.
But it's because we all expected them to come out and resume what they did last year. And I think that was flawed logic from our point of view.
Mm-hmm.
We should have tempered our expectations a little bit.
Yeah.
I thought Josh Richardson would be a lot better.
Yeah.
He's been my biggest disappointment for that team specifically. Like 37% from the field, but the big knock here, 27% from downtown on 5 attempts in 21 games. Like this guy shot what? 40 something, right? In his rookie season?
Yeah, 40 from downtown? 46.1.
46. Yeah, okay.
And he was
that shot.
He was not great last year. He was only at 33.
Right. But so now we have 1 year of good shooting, and we've had, not two full years so far, but we've had more games with average to poor shooting than we've had with good.
Yeah. I mean, this is like Marcus Smart level terrible.
It is. So what are they going to do? If this is the true Josh Richardson, and the first season was the outlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would be horrible.
Yeah.
Like, what do they do? Where do they go from here? And also, relatedly, how do they get Hassan Whiteside more motivated / involved?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be tricky because I believe I saw on Twitter today that he is out for the next... Yeah, he's out at least 1 to 2 weeks for a left knee bone bruise. So
yeah, but when he returns. So that's not the longest timeline. Thankfully, but
hopefully, I mean, we don't. They said at least 1 to 2 weeks, so it could be longer than that. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you in just what I mean. I had the Heat. I think pretty sure I had them seventh preseason.
Yeah, you had them high. You had them really high.
A comfortable seventh. I thought the eighth was coming down to Detroit and Philly, and I thought Charlotte, who we'll talk about momentarily, and Miami were like the 6 and 7 pretty easily. And we had, when we did the Southeast Division preview, we had Alanis Hauhauer, who writes, I believe it's for All You Can Heat. You know, she was pegging them as a possible top 4 seed which I, you know, when we talked to her, it seemed at least possible. Like, if things broke right for them, like, I mean, I love their depth chart is really good. Like, I like a lot of their players. They have the requisite depth to survive injuries. Maybe not to Whiteside or to Goran Dragic, but, like, if Deion Waiters went down, they had Tyler Johnson and Josh Richardson. If James Johnson went down, they had Justice Winslow and Kelly Olynyk, who could fill in as a four at times. Like,
oh, Wayne Ellington as well, who's actually playing well this year.
Yeah, like, they and they're spreading their minutes out well. I mean, I still like this team on paper. It's just, it hasn't clicked yet. I guess luckily they haven't dug themselves into what, an 11-30 hole like they did last year. Mm, so if they do dig themselves out this year, it's going to be a lot less challenging than it was last year. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned Richardson. Deion Waiters is barely, he's not cracking 40%. He's just under. Tyler Johnson's shooting 34.6% from the field and 29.9% from 3-point range. It's hard to find an offensive bright side. I guess Goran Dragic is probably, and James Johnson is just doing James Johnson things. But outside of that, it's been a disappointing start to a team that was really hot at the end of last year. I think that's safe to say.
Yeah. So, this is not a prediction. This is just sort of something I wouldn't be surprised to see happen. So with Whiteside going out, let's say he's out for three to 4 weeks instead.
Mm-hmm.
And Bam Adebayo comes in and he just feeds off everyone else. Mm-hmm. He doesn't demand touches. He plays around the rim. He takes open mid-range J's. And suddenly you look down and the Heat are considerably above 500.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell is your play from there?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like you've kind of, you know, you mentioned you're okay with the signings from this past summer, and I am too. The thing that gave me pause with them was the length, not the value is fine.
Right. Yeah.
But, like, they just lock themselves into 4 years of mediocrity if those guys don't take off.
Yeah, but I mean, like, do you trade Hassan if it turns out that...
I don't think you'd... I guess Dragic would be the logical one because he's got a reasonable contract, and I think he's only signed... He can opt out, I believe, after 2018-19. I'm going to double-check that to make sure I'm not lying. But he was signed on one of the post-cap or pre-cap spike jumps. So, yeah, he can opt out in 2019. So he's only $17 million this year, $18.1 next year. And then he can opt out in 2019, decline a $19.2 million player option, which you have to assume he's going to do, if only to lock in one more long-term deal, because he'll be heading into his age 33 season at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But
you wouldn't trade Hassan for, like, a pace and space big?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I guess it depends on who.
Obviously, yeah.
Like, I wouldn't... You know, we were talking about this last episode. Like, I wouldn't trade Hassan Whiteside for DeAndre Jordan.
No. I well, when it comes to the Heat, because they have a lot of those deals, I would just trade for DeAndre Jordan just to get off that deal. Later on, I wouldn't re-sign him.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I think Dragic, at least because you can feasibly plug Tyler Johnson in at the point guard spot and kind of just run. You know, Deion can play make, Josh Richardson, they can all, like, create shots for themselves, so you don't necessarily need... I mean, Goran Dragic is averaging 4.5 assists per game, so it's not like he's the traditional pound the ball up the floor every time. So I feel like he would have some trade value, but I don't know. It's a tough spot for the Heat to be in. I still think they'll turn it around and sneak into the playoffs, but it's a valid question, especially if Whiteside, as you mentioned, is out for longer than expected.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to go... Let's stick, I guess, in the Southeast Division. I mentioned earlier, I had the Charlotte Hornets as a comfortable playoff team. Right now, they are 8-12. They're only 2.5 games out of a playoff spot at the moment, but I don't know. It's just, this team is, it just hasn't lived up to expectations. And In part, we knew it was going to be a tough start to the season because Nick Batum suffered a torn ligament in his elbow in the preseason, missed basically the first month of the year. He's played 7 games. He's only shooting 37% so far, but hopefully that will go up. He already suffered a elbow bruise that forced him to miss a game. So, you know, maybe it's just a matter of they need Batum back and healthy and hitting a normal percentage of his shots, and then things will start clicking. Because, like, Dwight Howard's playing well. I mean,
yeah, he's doing decently. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we said it when he came into the year. Like, he played well in Atlanta. He's not as bad as national perception makes him seem. Jeremy Lamb's actually playing really well. And, you know, he filled in admirably for Batum. I guess the disappointment so far have been Marvin Williams. He had that career year, I believe, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
He just hasn't been able to build on it. And then MKG, at this point, it just feels like he is what he is. And I don't know. It begs the question of, once Batum is back and healthy, maybe you keep Jeremy Lamb in the starting lineup and move MKG to the bench. But at that point, yeah, you might, you know, maybe you value Lamb off the bench as your sixth man who can kind of command that second unit. It feels like the Hornets can still get back into this thing as long as Kemba stays upright. But I had higher hopes for them so far than they've been able to deliver on.
I'm really surprised you did not mention Malik Monk here.
Yeah, he's my baby boy. I don't want to rock the boat, but yeah, I mean, what, 35% overall?
He's doing okay from three, 34.6, which is okay for a rookie, but he came in with some pretty high expectations as a scorer, and to give them a lift. And you know, fair, he's averaging 7.6 points a game in 17 and a half minutes. That's decent production, but his inefficiency is just, it's not helping the issue.
Right.
But again, like, he needs time. I get that. It's completely fair. But had he been a knockdown shooter right off the bat, we would have seen a different Hornets team.
Yeah.
I would definitely move Michael Kidd-Gilchrist to the bench. I don't think he's starting material anymore. His defense is good, but the thing with him was, the hope was, if he never developed a jump shot, he was still a good dribbler, and he could pass the basketball. Mm-hmm. So he was kind of projected as being this sort of Scottie Pippen type player, but without the offense.
Right.
Right. You know what I mean? Like, the Swiss Army knife thing, but just without the ability to score.
Mm-hmm.
All right. 0.6 assists.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't really handle the ball a whole lot. He doesn't, you know, grab two steals a game and swat two shots. He's not Gerald Wallace-ing it up right there.
Right. Or even like what Damari Carroll is doing in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Or what he's doing in
Atlanta. Oh, that's...
I mean, that's... like, that's,
that's where we're at, right?
Right. Yeah. That's what you would want to see. And yeah. Oh, I would be remiss to not mention Michael Carter-Williams, who's shooting a sterling 20.9% overall. Just well done.
MCW.
Yeah. And that was a concern that we had coming into the season. We said if Kemba goes down, their point guard depth is awful.
Yep.
So
they
far.
They couldn't even get... Yeah, so far so true. Like, Malik Monk would probably have taken a few minutes, and he's not been delivering as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, here's the thing. They just need one. They need one guy out of that group to just buck the trend and start hitting.
Yeah. And it was Lamb. I just think it's now you need to reintegrate Batum back into the lineup and not throw Lamb off. Because Lamb, I would argue he's been their second best player. I guess, you know, it's between him and Dwight. But
I agree with you, but I would argue on one point. I think they always needed a Jeremy Lamb, and I think they need that extra boost now. Like, Lamb right now is one of the major reasons they have the 8 wins.
Yeah, for sure.
So if you have like a Dwayne Bacon or a Malik Monk who just suddenly out of nowhere starts hitting jump shots and is a reliable offensive player, that the whole chemistry of the offensive responsibility could change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is like interesting to see if that's going to happen, because you can't really ask Kemba to do a hell of a lot more.
No, you definitely cannot. Any other disappointments jump out to you?
I have one, I hate going it. Yeah. I hate going there. So, because we both agreed on this a couple years back, we had run this podcast for a few months, and we were going deep on Karl Anthony Towns,
mm-hmm.
and you and I were just nodding our heads in agreement, so proud of each other because of the fact that we were certain that he was going to turn into this defensive force under Tibbs, and you know, defensive player of the year awards were just going to fall by his feet. It was going to be amazing. And right now, I would argue he is one of the worst defensive big men in the entire league.
Yeah.
It is so bad that I'm right now contemplating, you know, the theory that he might never be good defensively.
I'm hesitant to go there, if only because
it's a theory.
Yeah, I know. I'm equally alarmed this year. And, you know, especially you figured, like, yeah, first year under Tibbs, it's going to take time. They brought in Jimmy. They brought in Taj. You figured Taj would be able to kind of impart that veteran wisdom, help him with a Tibbs scheme in particular. The fact it hasn't happened still, and that he's, you know, this slow on defense. The speed, I feel like, is the big concern. Like, it just seems like he's not recognizing where he needs to be. Like, he doesn't understand positioning as well as he should.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, you know, he's, what, 21, 22? Like, we've seen it.
22.
22. So we've seen it happen with big men where it just takes them time to figure this stuff out. Like, it, you know, it's point guards and big men often have the longest acclimation period to the NBA coming out of college. Yeah,
that's true.
So, like, you know, after basically, I don't want to say we wrote off Andre Drummond, but saying that he stagnated last year and then seeing what he's turned into this year, I don't want to, like, write off Karl Anthony Towns at the age of 22 becoming a better defender. You know,
he just
turned 22 in November 15th. Like, he's,
but he's not going to be like a DPOY player.
Yeah, that is looking progressively more doubtful. I will give you that for sure.
That's the thing. Like, we labeled him, we and the rest of basketball Twitter labeled him, you know, as a coming future defensive force.
Yeah.
So I think that's the narrative that I'm trying to break off here. I'm definitely in full agreement with you. I think he is going to become, at the very least, a slightly below average defender, which you can survive with, like, you can have on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he's going to be that force. I don't think he's going to win all those awards, and I'm just kind of doubting if he's ever going to be downright good on that end.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, he gets bullied in the post, even though he's stronger. Like, he doesn't realize his own size. I'm completely dumbfounded when someone goes into the post against him. Like, he just has no clue. He bites on small head fakes. He reaches. His feet are completely out of position, and before you know it, it's a simple, you know, one step pivot, boom, layup, or a small fadeaway jump shot that is completely wide open. He just doesn't guard them that well. And you, when you're a big, you need to be able to defend in isolation.
Yeah.
In particular.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. I think you're right in that I'm not ready to write him off as a possibly average to above average defensive player, but DPOY, that ship does, at least for now, it appears to have sailed. And it's really affecting, you know, the Timberwolves are fine right now. They're fourth in the West. They're 13-9. So, like, they aren't having, it's not like they're going to miss the playoffs because of it, but their defense right now is 23rd in the league, which, coming, you know, it's a Tibbs team. You do not expect a Tibbs team to be fifth in offense and 23rd in defense, but here we are.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, who else? I'm going to go, yeah. We talked about this guy a couple weeks ago, but the whole Nerlens situation in Dallas is just, yeah. I mean, God, the fact that he's barely getting minutes. Like, just, it's, you know, you had to figure, they offer him a 4-year, $70 million deal. He turns it down. He wants a max deal. He takes the qualifying offer. That probably rubbed some people in the Dallas organization the wrong way. But, he was getting consistent minutes until the early November. Since then, he's gotten 4 did not plays and has not played. He hasn't played more than, 6 minutes in a game since November 4th. It's December 1st now. Like, if we're going to have the free Jahlil Okafor campaign, can we also have the free Nerlens Noel campaign? Like, it's really, I mean, my God, like, he's a good, you know, he's not anything special offensively. He's mostly just a rim runner. They profiled him as the next Tyson Chandler. I feel like, you know, we just went on this rant about not calling players the next X, mm-hmm. but stylistically, as you said, they profile as,
yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Adding more words.
Yeah. But, you know, defensively, he's legit. Like, if he gives a shit, which maybe he doesn't in Dallas anymore, maybe Rick Carlisle has just snuffed out his love of playing basketball. But it's just such a bummer. Like, I think it's safe to say that if the Mavericks don't trade him by the trade deadline, which they should, considering there is no way in hell he is re-signing with them, I just hope he finds his way to a team that's actually going to let him play next year.
Where do you want him to land?
I mean, this is where it comes down to what he thinks of himself as. Like, if he wants to prioritize being a starting center and he doesn't give a damn whether he's going to a good team or a bad team, I think that's the wrong approach for him to take. But it's not my money, so who am I to tell him where to go? But I would like to see
him. You know that's going to be his approach.
Right. But I'd like to see him go. I mean, you know, Brooklyn would be fun just because them getting lottery talent at, like, discount prices is awesome. And I love Sean Marks for what he's been doing there. But I think I saw Darren Wolfson of ESPN 1500 mention Minnesota is possibly interested in him. That would be interesting as a backup big to Towns. Milwaukee, I know they've got a million bigs still, but that would be fun. Like, I don't know what the asking price is for a guy who is clearly not coming back next year. Like, I don't think the Mavericks could possibly get, if they can get a first round pick for him, kudos to them. So, I don't know what they would be looking for, or if they're just like, screw it, we're just going to chain you to the bench all year because we hate you that much.
Yeah.
But I'd like to see him go to a playoff caliber team where he's maybe not the starter. He maybe comes in and plays 20, 25 minutes a game off the bench, but infuses the bench with some, you know, defensive energy, intensity, basically like what the Wizards thought they were getting from Ion Mahinmi. That did not turn out to be the case. And if he can find a place where he's the starter, more power to him. But
I still think Washington, like you just mentioned it. Yeah. So.
Yeah, or I mean, Toronto would be fun, like Cleveland, just because that's where all players who get bought out either end up in Cleveland or Golden State. I mean,
no, but like if you imagine on Washington,
yeah,
when you think about it, like the age kind of fits with Wall and Beal.
Yeah, that's true.
And you have Marcin Gortat, who's going to be 34, so he would be like the natural, you know, predecessor. No, successor.
So, yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
English is still my second language.
Yeah. They would just need to trade for him and get his bird right so they can go over the cap to re-sign him. But yeah, I mean.
Right. So, I mean, that would just be logical. And here's the thing. I'm still not in love, like I said in the last episode, with centers who can't shoot. In fact, I would stay clear of them as much as I can. However, if you can get Nerlens for real damn cheap, and the contract that you re-sign with him is of good value for the team, like, I don't know, eight to nine million a year, mm-hmm. then why not?
Yeah. Right.
He could outproduce that contract easily.
Even if it's only a 1 or 2 year deal. And right. then, you know, if he lives up to expectations, re-sign him for more later on. But mm-hmm. yeah, I think teams should be calling Dallas quickly about Nerlens because he's better than this. Like he oh, deserves absolutely. To be playing minutes somewhere.
Yeah.
Any other disappointments jump out to you, Mort?
I'm looking over not just the standings, but also looking over rosters and whatnot. And well, I was actually gonna point out Justin Holliday from the Bulls, but I kind of think he has an excuse. Because the knock on him, which is fair, is that he's shooting so much and he's not hitting anything. I mean, he's shooting 37% and 7.7 three-point attempts per game. Mm-hmm. But it's all by design. And I have a hard time blaming a guy on something when something's by design, by the mm-hmm. coach. And you can just hear Fred scream constantly that when Justin has the ball and there's just a slither of daylight, shoot it, shoot it. And he's not a volume shooter. He's one of those guys that feeds off of others. Mm-hmm. So when he's asked to be the primary, you know, shot taker and shot maker, you're putting him in a position that he's just not used to. He's not accustomed to it. It's not his style. So I think the disappointment here, which really isn't a disappointment because we all know that Fred sucks, mm-hmm. is just that Fred sucks a lot more than we thought he would. So yeah. That's the disappointment. The disappointment is this should be a rebuilding year, which is also meant as a teaching year for the Bulls. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing is just loading up this team with bad habits. Mm-hmm. That's disappointing for any team rebuilding. You don't want to use the rebuilding process as a means of building bad habits. Mm-hmm. And of course the Bulls are doing that.
Yeah. That's all fair points. Yeah, I mean, I guess you could just call the Bulls a disappointment in general, but that seems unfair because we knew exactly what we were getting this year. I mean, yeah. I think the fact that we could name so many surprises, and there are frankly a lot that we probably didn't even touch on, and not as many disappointments, speaks to how well the league is positioned right now. Like, mm-hmm. outside of a handful of teams, most of whom at least have one or two prospects or players worth monitoring anyway. I mean, like, the Suns suck, but they have Devin Booker. The Hawks suck, but, like, Taurean Prince is really fun. John Collins, he's out for a couple weeks now, but he's great. Like,
yeah.
The league is in phenomenal shape right now. So I think overall, probably my biggest surprise is just the state of the Eastern Conference in particular. The fact that we made so many jokes about, you know, in the offseason how much talent went to the West. Like, the East is the JV, it's the West varsity. Mm. They're going to have trouble filling the Eastern Conference all-star team, as you joked about earlier. No, they aren't. Like, there are plenty of deserving players in both conferences. In fact, I mean, one could argue the East so far through the first quarter of the season has, you know, the West has Houston, Golden State, San Antonio, all of whom are great. San Antonio, of course, without Kawhi Leonard, is 14-7. Like, just wait till Kawhi comes back. Like, they, you know, those are three legit championship contenders. But then in that, like, next tier, you could argue the East has more teams in that tier. Washington,
yeah.
Detroit, Toronto, Milwaukee, Philly, depending on how you feel about them. You know, then the West, who is just ravaged by injury. I guess a disappointment would be all of the injuries. I'm going to hope...
lots of injuries.
Going to hope we nip those in the bud early, and that means everyone's back and healthy by the playoffs. But, you know, we've already lost Gobert for a month. Millsap until February, probably. Patrick Beverley's done for the year. Conley's out with the Achilles.
Ross out indefinitely.
Yeah. And now Shumpert's out.
For like two months.
Yeah. D'Angelo Russell, Jeremy Lin, Gordon Hayward. Like, the list goes on. That's a bummer. But thankfully, the league is in such good shape that even without all of those players, like, I've just been having a damn ball with this season. We know how it's going to end. It's going to end with the Warriors championship more likely than not. But as we said coming into the year, there is a lot of reason to tune in every night. It's still really fun. So
we are in Stewie's time machine because I've heard, I was pretty young at the time, but that every NBA fan back in 1997 were kind of like, oh, we know the Bulls are going to win the ring again with Michael because they were coming off the 72-10 season.
Sure.
So that season for a lot of people were like, oh, you know, we know what's going to happen. There's no level of excitement to it. But then, you know, you had Glenn Rice and Mitch Richmond just going off. And it was a fun season anyway. So it's nice to see that some things return to form. Also, LaMarcus Aldridge, we forgot about
good.
Him.
Yeah, that's a good note to sign off on. He is bawling his brains out right now, and I hope
Sarah's favorite player.
Every Spurs fan's favorite player. Yeah, hopefully he can keep it up when Kawhi comes back, which seems like it might be in a couple weeks, so that'll be fun. Until then...
Until that gets pushed back.
Yeah, right. Again and again and again. But until then, that'll do it for this episode of the NBA Podcast. Thank you all for joining us. Reminder that you can follow us on Twitter. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can follow us at the NBA Pod. We're also on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We would love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports. So check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. Until next time, I'm Brian Tepork, and I was joined by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. Always fun recording 3.5 hours of podcast with you.
That's how we do. Happy Friday.
You too, man.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.